Family on Fire, Scott Jones, your host. We got a nice episode planned for you guys today. Athlete on Fire has been around since 2014. Got a great little show for you guys today. Some of my goals are telling stories from entrepreneurial things and business things I've done in the last 15 years. Lots of crazy stuff, whether it's just with my own businesses or with the stuff that me and my wife have done. If we had an idea, especially in the early days, if we had an idea, like there's a business the next day, it's just kind of crazy. So I have so many fun and, to me, interesting, I think to you, interesting stories, usually with the backdrop of health and fitness and sports performance, some way, shape, or form of getting people active and moving through all these businesses, whether it was a marketing company we started back in 2010 during the the Democratic National Convention in Denver. We had a marketing idea that we actually got in front of some big wigs with, or whether it was our race directing company that we did for 10 years. There's been a lot in between too. So I'm gonna tell some stories. I'm always gonna talk to my boys. I have two boys, Wyatt and Wes, 9 and 11 at this point. I don't do a lot of social media with them. Like, I don't post a lot of pictures of those guys and like share their stories too much. I think that's a philosophy we can dive into down the road too. I just think it's their job to go live a cool life, and if they want to share their successes, then they can. I don't want to put undue pressure. There's plenty of pressure on these kids out there anyway. So we're gonna let the kids share their stories when they get of age, which in my house is probably gonna be mid to late teens. They're not getting phones before they're 15. So if you think that's crazy too, you can just let me know. But yeah, I'm gonna talk to the boys a little bit. I got a fun story from this 5K we put on in Santa Barbara, California, back in about 2010 or 11. I definitely messed up. The person that I was in charge of definitely messed up. At the end of the day, I took the blame. We'll just say that. But it was freaking crazy when you have a couple hundred people thinking they're going to run a 5K and they run significantly more than that. Let's just say that. We got a shout out for a runner. One of my clients, actually, she's out in Sweden running today for charity in some really cold weather in a 5K loop. And I can't wait to talk about that a little bit. Usually I bring on some guests, but it's 5 or 6 in the morning right now. We're not going to do that today. I got a great workout for you. I just did with a client in the gym the other day, and it was a burner, high reps. Put your head down, shut up, grab a towel, wipe some sweat off your face, get a sip of water every once in a while, and then burn it up a little bit. This is a good one. And then I got a resource, usually some kind of tech resource or website or something, and this one's been really good for getting into backcountry, whether it's hunting or doing a big route in the backcountry and wanting to make sure that you're in the right spot. So let's dive right into it. So boys, Wyatt West, I just want to give you guys a little love right now. You guys have been so freaking disciplined lately. It's been really cool to see. I kind of floated this out there, probably my fault, that if they walked our dog Waylon, we have a German short hair pointer who's just, he's got a lot of energy, but he's a great dog, and he's getting better. He's getting better with people, and he's a little skittish early on. We told them if they walked him a mile a day for 30 days straight, coffee sip, 30 days straight, that we would get another dog. Now, as a parent, you know, keeping your word is really important, so we will always keep our word. But there's always a backdrop. Like, we kind of want another dog for this dog. We've got an acre here up at 9,000 feet in Colorado. Plenty of room for another dog to run around. We think it would give the dog that we do have a little more energy out. And so we're completely on board. It was something we wanted to do anyway. But it's winter here in Colorado. It gets dark at 4:40. It's cold. The footing's not great. We live on a dirt road, and there's holes and uneven ground and all that stuff. And the boys, they're going to school. They're doing sports and stuff like that. So I don't know, probably 6 out of the last 15 days, they've had to go at like 8 o'clock at night. They put their headlamps on, they grab a walkie-talkie, that's how we let them go explore, and they just do it. And you see these little headlamps out in the street getting these laps in. So really proud of these boys doing this thing. It would not be as impressive down in town. We lived in town in the suburb of Denver for years and years, and it's just way more impressive. And it's one of the things I really love about living kind of rurally with access to a big city. I'm less than an hour away from downtown Denver. I go down a couple days a week to work with clients in person. I just can't give up that part of my business. I enjoy it too much. But, man, it's just been really cool to see the things that we can do up here that build mental and physical discipline without, like, driving us crazy as parents. You know, you tell your kids to clean something, and you're going back and you're redoing it for them just because they're learning. So, like, this just hard physical labor, you know, not chopping wood necessarily. They're not strong enough to do that, but carrying wood to the fireplace and taking care of chickens. We'll talk about that a lot on the show for sure. So YNOS, really proud of you guys. It's really awesome. All right, the story bit. So back in 2010, me and my wife were traveling down in South America, and we were looking for something new. We were kind of, we tried a couple of little business concepts that just weren't there, and we just wanted to, we wanted to dive into something else. And we went to the coffee shop, or no, the bookstore right before we went down there to South America, and we read Born to Run literally in one sitting. And if you guys are listening to this, there's a good chance you've read or heard of Born to Run. Christopher McDougall wrote this book back in 2009, 2010, and it was about the Tarahumara tribe down in Mexico. And anyway, we can talk about that book at a different point, but we got inspired on this minimalist running and barefoot running concept. It made a very good argument for it, at the very least, implementing some barefoot stuff into your athletic endeavor. So literally sitting in somewhere down in Argentina or Chile, we came up with a concept called the Naked Foot 5K. So it's a barefoot or minimalist 5K. Great story that goes around this. But anyway, this is the second year after we started putting this thing on. We were out in Santa Barbara. We just picked like these towns that we wanted to go visit. There's no strategy to this whatsoever. So we picked this town, Santa Barbara. Never been there. Had friends that had a grandmother that lived in that town. Yeah, coffee break. And we wanted to go out there. So the way that we would do this is we would put all of our equipment, like extension cords and signage and cones, in a suitcase. We had a 6-month-old baby at the time. And we would ship all of our race equipment, except for the stuff that we couldn't bring, like water and food and stuff like that. And then we would rent a couple things, and we'd put these on so low-key. Like, talk about bootstrapped. We didn't want to spend an extra dollar because we didn't have very much money at all. So yeah, we were going out there. We had a couple hundred people, and usually we'd have a charity partner in these hyper-local little races. And I can't remember who our charity partner for Santa Barbara was for that year. But in any case, the charity partners would usually give us volunteers, kind of as a trade-off. Like, it's really hard to put on a race without volunteers. We need volunteers. We don't have a lot of money to pay people to come out here. So it was a trade-off. We give them 10-20% or something like that, and they give us some volunteers. So there's a local small college down the street, and I actually knew a kid from Colorado that was going there. So I hit him up, and I don't know, we got like eight guys from the college to come out and volunteer for us. And as far as races are concerned, it's probably the easiest route that you could ever think of. We started on the beach in Santa Barbara. I think it's called Chase Palm Park off memory. Really pretty little park, completely pristine. Lots of money in Santa Barbara, kind of ridiculous money if you ask me. Palm trees everywhere. The grass, like behind the sand, between like a sidewalk and the ocean, was just always manicured. There's flowers everywhere. Just a really, really pretty scene. So we got these 200 runners to line up. Half of them are running barefoot. We're on the beach. Half of them are running minimalist shoes. A few people wearing normal running shoes. We let everybody do it. And the route was literally you run out on the beach, like on the sand, and then you would come back on the grassy area / sidewalk that came back to the start and finish area. That was it. It was out and back with a little bit of a turn to get on the sidewalk on the way back. And all my volunteers had to do, the only place I really needed volunteers was at that turnaround. And I don't know, at this point I'd probably put on 7 or 8 events. Today as we speak, I'd probably put on 130 or 150 running events. So we definitely had systems in place. But for whatever reason, it was before I would like ride my bike at the front of the race just to make sure everything's going well. Like, it's just 5Ks are so tricky because if you mess anything up, it ruins everybody's day. You know, half marathons, which we've put on too, you got some room for error, man. If you didn't mark well at mile 8, you can get out there and make sure it's fixed. Not for a 3.1 mile race. Anyway, I don't know, 20 minutes goes by, and usually the front runners are, you can at least see the front runners by 20 minutes, even if it's a slower race, but there's nothing. I can't see anything for the whole distance of the way they were supposed to come back. So I started getting a little nervous, rightfully slow. So I'm trying to call the kid who's at the turnaround. He's not answering his phone. So then I just sprint down that mile and a half, and I get there, and finally, right when I get there, a bunch of runners start heading back. And what had happened was he he was either shy or he didn't have the voice to just tell people to turn around. He was too nervous, and I should, you know, it was on me to know who I had there. But what happened basically is these people just kept running down the beach. There was no turnaround. And I think 80% of the people who did that race that day did like 5 to 7 miles. A lot of people turned around earlier because they knew it was too far, just from simple math and from the description before the race. So it was just a classic lesson on knowing where to put people, making sure you have the right people in the right spot, being clear with your instructions. And I ate that one. And luckily, it wasn't a race. It was a fun run. People were cool. They understood. I just defaulted to, hey, you got more distance for the same price, so it was more value, right? That kind of stuff. But holy crap, man, you're talking about just like heart rate going up and your face getting red and just feeling the tension of just messing up on something. So anybody who is out in Santa Barbara who might have run that race, the Naked Foot 5K back in 2010 or 11, thank you so much for not just tearing me up on the internets and the socials. I think Naked Foot 5K is still on Facebook. I went there the other day. We had like 10,000 followers, maybe. But yeah, so that was a huge lesson, crazy story. I have so many race directing stories that they might fill up a lot of the story time. All right, so the next little segment here is a little shout out. I'm going to do shout outs for clients and friends and that people in my network that are doing cool stuff. Hannah is out in Sweden. She hired me about 6 months ago to get her to some long distances. She's been awesome to work with. And she is run. She's kind of the way she describes it, she's kind of like a mini celebrity out there, because she did Sweden's version of the Survivor show. So she was on there, and you know, they make everybody polarizing on that show just because that's what gets people's eyeballs on the screen. So she did that, and she's got a little notoriety, and she had an opportunity to work with, how she described it, like kind of like a NPR of Sweden, where they're doing a fundraiser for some charitable stuff out there. And this is all the way she described it. I can't read any of the website because I can't, I don't speak Swedish or whatever language you're speaking over there. And so basically they built like a glass enclosure that's like a building where a lot of influencers and celebrities go and do like this fundraiser thing, and they're doing a lot of social and a lot of radio spots and stuff like that. And it's in a park in her hometown. And then what she's doing to raise money is she's going to run as far as she can. There's no time limit. They're posted up for a while. She's doing a 5K loop. And every time she comes through, she can go into the hut or whatever that glass building is and get, you know, it's kind of like an aid station for a normal race. Her boyfriend's kind of crewing her. So she's just going to hit laps, man, for as long as she can. And Sweden gets dark at like 4 o'clock. It gets dark really early over there in the wintertime. And it's really, really cold this weekend. I think she said it's Fahrenheit equates to low double digits to down to zero. So it's going to be really cold. And because the footing is going to be kind of icy and there's some snow on the ground, like it's not going to be a fast race by any means. But she's so, you know, she's so nervous and she's got such great energy about it. I'm just really excited to see how she does. I've done this myself. I love when people use their bodies to do cool things in the world and to inspire other people and to help other people. So big shout out to Hannah over there in Sweden. Hope she should be running right now. Actually, I just started today, so it should be pretty interesting. All right, now we got a workout I did the other day. There's a client I have here in town who I'll probably work with him every fifth or sixth set, just to make sure it's what I want it to be and it's what the effort that I need out of him. And you know, he's a general fitness client. We're not looking for huge gains in speed or explosiveness. And he's a few years older than me, so we're pretty close in age. But here's the workout. Round one, you do 40 reps. Round two, you do 30. Then you do 3 rounds of 20. And you go in order. And you can't go to the next exercise until all the reps are done. So the first couple rounds are either body weight or really light. And then the last 3 sets of 20, you go up in weight where you can. And the goal is to hit all 20 without taking a lot of breaks. So it's got to be something where like the last 5 or 6 reps feel like you're dying. Okay, so you got here are the movements. You got goblet squats. It's where you hold a weight underneath your chin and you do deep squats. Elbows need to touch your knees. Then you go to bench or chest press. You're definitely not gonna be using a lot of weight on this stuff, guys. Pull downs, that's if you have a machine, or you can use the band to get underneath the bar and just do band pull downs. I did it with a band. It was plenty of work for me, for sure. Then you have step ups per leg, so you got 40 on the right, 40 on the left. And the box or the bench that you need to pick puts your knee a little bit past 90. So it needs to be pretty steep and challenging for you. And then when you get to those 20s, like, definitely add some weight on the step-ups. Sit-ups, just old-school sit-ups, or you can do butterfly sit-ups where the soles of your feet are touching each other and your knees are down towards the ground. Those add up. You can add a little weight towards the end there, too. Hanging knee up, so find a bar, hang from the bar, bring your knees up to a little bit past 90. Grip strength for the first couple rounds is definitely an issue there. And then you got curls. You can use dumbbells. You can use a curl bar, whatever you got to do. Just make sure that you can get the reps in. And then you got tricep pushdowns. Machine or bands are really good for that as well. So round one and two. Round one, we just did body weight or really light on the bands and bar for the bench. Round two, we added a little bit weight for the stuff that you could. So the places that you can add weight: goblet squats, your bench, obviously pull downs if you're using a machine, step ups, you can add a little bit of weight. Sit-ups you can, knee-ups you can't really, and then curls and triceps obviously you can. So most of the stuff you can add a little bit of weight, but what you'll find is that the reps, even if you didn't add a single pound on any of that stuff, would just about be enough. It's over 1,000 reps in the workout. It took us about 55 minutes. So if you keep the hammer down the way that it's set up, you should be able to recover from a leg set while you're doing an upper body set, and upper body while you're doing core, so forth and so on. But just a great workout. Anybody can do it, as long as you've been working a little bit. If you're getting into it and you haven't been working at a high level or doing a lot of reps lately, then I would cut all the reps in half or just go really light. But that's something that you can do. Great set. And lastly, today we're going to start or finish with a little resource. It's called Onyx. It's an app. Anybody who's ever hunted in any kind of backcountry has this app, but it's really good for, they have a backcountry thing. So if you're a backcountry hiker or for runners too, if you get in these spots where you're butted up against national forest, but you're allowed to get off trail, there's a lot of places in Colorado you can do that. You can find out where public and private property are, so you don't get yourself in trouble and get on somebody's private land. All you do is you just tap a place on the screen on the map that you have, and it shows you exactly if you're on public or private land. It's pretty cool. And you download it before you go into the backcountry so you can use it without service. That part's awesome. You can drop pins everywhere. Like if there's a water source that you want to remember, you can drop a pin and make a note. That seems to be really helpful. If you're trying to get to a peak, you can tap that sucker and see how far away you are in real time. Like just having those real time tools are awesome compared to what we used to do with old school maps and stuff. The topo is really accurate. You can really zoom in really well, and you can share notes with friends and make certain things public. So if people just want you to know certain things about a route or an area, you can find all that stuff. So it sounds like an ad for those guys, but I use it all the time. I think it's a great resource for people if you do that type of stuff. But anyway, thanks for spending some time with me, you guys. Athlete on Fire is the show, obviously. Not a lot on the website right now. That's just kind of my personal brand. But if you do want to find out stuff that I'm working on, go check out Becoming Ultra. I've been putting a lot of time into that lately, becomingultra.com. And have a great day wherever you're at. We'll see you soon. Thanks a lot.